charges for phone hacking in Britain.
And Germany's sterling credit rating could get dinged. Hello, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York.
And I'm Jeff Horwich in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Tuesday, July 24th. Also, you know, when the folks coming to visit are known as the Troika, you can be pretty sure that's probably not a social call. The Troika is in Greece today trying to figure out whether the country is doing what it should be doing in response to billions in bailout money.
And politicians may want to think twice before they use things like social networking and online profiling to target their ads to constituents. That coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
First, to perhaps the biggest news to break this morning, 8 people have been charged in the phone hacking scandal that closed down Rupert Murdoch's paper, The News of the World. The BBC's Rob Watson has more.
It's clear at least 8 people are now to face trial in the UK over phone hacking. The prosecutions target some of the most senior figures at The News of the World. Most prominent are the 2 former editors of the newspaper, Andy Coulson and Rebecca Brooks, also charged as the paper's former chief news reporter, Neville Furlbeck. Announcing the charges, a spokeswoman for the prosecution service said they related to the illegal interception of voicemail messages of more than 600 people, including such celebrities as Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Here's Professor of Journalism, Stuart Purvis.
This is really going to be an unprecedented event in media, in British journalism history, a full trial on criminal charges. We've had editors sometimes accused of contempt of court. I can't remember where we've actually had a whole series of editors charged with criminal offences.
So, a year after the hacking scandal exploded, with the revelation that the phone of a murdered schoolgirl had been hacked, a new legal phase in the scandal has begun. In London, I'm the BBC's Rob Watson for Marketplace.
Moody's Investor Service has lowered the outlook for the credit ratings of 3 of Europe's strongest economies, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and Germany. It's part of a busy day in Europe that has investors a bit on edge. Markets there have closed modestly down. For more, the BBC's Steve Evans is with me from Berlin. Hello, Steve.
Good morning to you.
So, Steve, we're always hearing that Germany is in the best shape of just about anybody around. Why would they get their outlook lowered by Moody's?
In a way, they look like they may well be downgraded just because of their strengths. In other words, Germany would pick up the bill if there's a default by Greece, for example, and Moody's is recognizing that it's Germany which will pick up the tab.
German and Spanish ministers are meeting in Germany today. What's on the table for them?
Well, clearly the crisis. The general idea was that the bailout of the Spanish banks, what was it, 3 weeks ago, was meant to be an end of the matter. But it's a little bit like if you throw a bit of red meat at a ravenous beast, the danger is that they get a taste for more. So the market seemed to be saying there will be more needed. Therefore, the signals have to be sent that more's got to come.
The Troika, which is the EU, IMF, and representatives as well of the European Central Bank, are headed to Greece today, already there, I presume. What do they need to hear from the Greek government?
What they need to hear is everything's on track, therefore go away happy. But all the signs are they're actually saying behind the scenes, we need more time. And the difficulty with that is that the German people are not minded to give Greece more time or more money. There is a view in the German government that that would be manageable, Greece leaving the euro. That's not a universal view.
And hence that brings us full circle back to that downgrade that we began talking about. The BBC's Steve Evans in Berlin. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And for more on that so-called Troika meeting in Greece, we've got Dimitris Doulos. He's an economist at the American College of Greece, and he's with us from his office near Athens. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you, too.
We report on this seemingly constant stream of supposedly do-or-die moments for Greece. How pivotal is this one?
All the meetings with Troika are serious, there's no doubt about that. But this time they just came to check if we had any progress in the period before and after the elections as far as the structural changes that we are supposed to proceed with.
So it has been about a month since those elections you mentioned. Is the new government there having any better luck than the previous ones at solving this conflict between the austerity they promised and the pain that many Greeks seem to be refusing to accept?
I think the government shows that it is serious in proceeding with changes. The good thing is that soon they realize then that there is a lot of room for negotiation. And now they have started proceeding with the changes at a slower pace than they should, of course, but they have shown some progress.
Despite the fact that all the sides here are continuing to talk, continuing to work together, it sounds like many Greeks are resigned to ultimately leaving the euro. If you could speak to your fellow Greeks right now and grab them by the shoulders and shake them a bit and say, this is what's going to happen if we leave the euro, what would you tell them?
Oh, the inflation will erode their incomes. People don't realize that, but if we go back to a national currency, the national currency will devalue and the purchasing power of the incomes will decline. Things that we import, like gasoline, for instance, will be very, very expensive. So that will automatically cause a huge decline in the standard of living.
Economist Dimitris Doulos from Greece, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The 2012 Olympic Games begin in London on Friday, but there's much debate over the cost of the event, which has already set the country back at least $15 billion. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
It was 7 years ago that the head of the Olympics broke the news.
The Games of the 30th Olympiad in 2012 are awarded to the city of London.
The Brits were ecstatic, but 7 years on, and now mired in recession, the UK's enthusiasm has waned. And that's why Prime Minister David Cameron is stressing the financial benefit of hosting the Games.
They should be great for our economy. We shouldn't see them as some sort of expensive luxury in tough times.
He says the Olympics will pump $20 billion into the British economy. Chris Daniels of Lloyds Bank, which is one of the sponsors, says that figure is more likely to be $25 billion.
That comes from construction, from tourism, from new jobs created, and from spending on the Games.
But hang on a minute. Construction? One lonely digger scratching the earth in a corner of the Olympic Park last week. Colin Ellis of Moody's says the economic boost from construction has come and gone.
The stadium is built, the park is ready, and that support which had been seen to UK construction firms in the run-up to the Olympics has probably been waning for some time now.
And he doubts there'll be a real boost to tourism, since many non-Olympic visitors may give London a miss this year.
I'm gonna win. Yes, I'm gonna win.
In tune with their official song, Olympic organisers claim London will be the biggest winner from the Games. A rundown part of town has been regenerated. And then, says Chris Daniels of Lloyds Bank, there's the feel-good factor,
which is roughly equivalent to around $200 in everyone's pocket for just being proud of having the Games in London.
But Londoners love to gripe, so even those who oppose the Olympics should get their money's worth too, moaning about the Games. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
So, Stacey, as you probably know, but do not indulge in, you can gamble on all kinds of things related to the Olympics.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes, yes.
If you go to places where you can do that kind of thing, including, apparently, you can gamble on whether London Mayor Boris Johnson will set his hair on fire with the Olympic torch. The mayor is known, I don't know if you've seen this guy, he's a little rotund, kind of a jolly fellow, and he's known for his shaggy blonde hair, and apparently he's a bit of a klutz. So you put that together with his ceremonial Olympic duties, and you had 66-1 odds of some sort of hair incident. That was, and here's where this gets newsy. Until this week, the mayor got his hair cut, and he got it cut shorter, but not exactly short. So the odds are a little different now, 100-1.
That's why you always have to hedge.
That's right. Hedge against the hair incident. We'll have to think about how you would hedge that in the Olympics.
Well, speaking of interesting side stories, I have a good one for you, Jeff.
Uh-huh.
So the makers of the Roomba vacuum cleaner, you know, that little round vacuum cleaner that runs on its own?
I used to have one and I miss it dearly.
Well, apparently that company, iRobot, is getting into the healthcare business. They've just unveiled a little robot called the RP Vita at the Clinical Innovations Forum in Santa Barbara. And the robot basically helps patients see doctors who are elsewhere. So the robot sort of moves around via a joystick that I guess the doctor controls.
Okay.
And it comes with a large screen where you can see your doctor's face.
A Roomba with a big screen with a doctor on it.
I know. And apparently the doctor would just have to have an internet connection and they could, you know, basically do your checkup with you from a phone or an iPad.
Huh. Can you tell your doctor to vacuum your floors while he's at it?
That I would love to see.
Combination Roomba and RP Vita.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
A study out today says voters find targeted online political ads creepy, and 86% didn't want political ads to be tailored to their interests. Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now from Washington. Good morning, Nancy.
Hey, Stacey.
Nancy, how exactly do these targeted political ads work?
Well, Stacey, I think you do a fair amount of shoe shopping online.
I don't know what you mean, Nancy.
Yeah, no idea, right? So let's say you do. Campaigns will look at what credit card you use, and then they look at what news articles you read between the shoe shopping. And basically, they track what you do on and offline, and they build up a database about you. And this is called micro-targeting.
Well, I can see why people would find that creepy.
Yeah. People think it's an invasion of privacy. And this survey, which I should mention is from the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Pennsylvania, says that people dislike targeted political ads more than ads that try to get them to buy something.
Did people click on the political ads?
Yeah, kind of like with negative political ads where people say they hate them, but they watch them anyway.
Yes, exactly.
I talked about that with one of the authors of the study, Joseph Turow. He teaches communication at the University of Pennsylvania. And he says people feel more strongly about these targeted online political ads because they're more personal.
People don't like to be tracked. People are upset by the idea that they're being followed. They don't want the political process to be managed in the way that this tailoring suggested is being managed.
And Turow says in the long run, voters are going to wonder what a candidate really stands for because they're just getting these ads with candidates saying things they think the voter wants to hear.
Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you.
You're welcome.
This summer's drought seems to go on and on. We've been following that pretty closely because it is a huge economic story. The National Drought Mitigation Center says nearly two-thirds of states are sweltering under hot and dry conditions. Now, that's bad news for the farmers there, but growers in the rest of the country could see a banner year. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein.
Watching the news lately has been kind of scary for Leanne Vanderpool.
Pictures of Illinois and Indiana, and their crops are pretty much gone. More than even in the fall when the corn turns brown, it's just dried up.
When Vanderpool looks across her 320 acres in western Minnesota, she sees green. Spring rains and moderate temperatures in the upper Midwest and the Dakotas makes all the difference.
And in some of the places, they've just gotten excellent rains right when they needed them.
Iowa State economist Mike Duffy.
We always talk about $1 million rain because that's how much grain it'll generate.
Duffy says corn prices have nearly doubled and could keep rising. But forecasts predict the drought could spread even to Vanderpool's farm, Pastures of Plenty.
It can almost smell like the corn fields are almost cooking. It's almost like a sweet corn smell in the air.
Vanderpool says she rather smell wet dirt. She hopes the weatherman's right, who expects some of that $1 million rain later this week. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Manufacturing in China grew at its fastest pace in 5 months, thanks to an uptick in export orders. Meanwhile, the country's government-controlled oil company, CNOOC, is snapping up Nexen of Canada for $15 billion. Nexen is big in the oil sands of Alberta and the Gulf of Mexico. Mitchell Hartman has that story.
7 years ago, CNOOC tried to buy American oil company Unocal. Opposition in Congress to Chinese ownership of a major strategic asset sank that deal. But don't expect any roadblocks from the U.S. government this time, says trade expert Ben Powell. He was counsel to the National Intelligence Director in the George W. Bush administration.
Nexen's assets in the United States are far more limited than Unocal's, mostly some leaseholds in the Gulf of Mexico.
Nexen does own big oil and gas fields in Western Canada. Analyst Trevor Hauser at the Rhodium Group says China isn't out to control energy supplies to the U.S. It's after something else, know-how.
Nexen employs pretty advanced oil and gas producing technologies from hydrofracking for shale to deep water offshore to production of oil sands.
As oil that's easy to find runs out around the world, China can use these new technologies to become a bigger player in the energy market. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We're getting to the height of vacation season, and many well-off families are retreating to newly purchased second homes. The National Association of Realtors reports brisk sales of luxury vacation houses. Kate Archer-Kent of Red River Radio met some eager buyers in Florida and asked, what's the rush?
Joy Siegel is shopping for a beachfront family compound, or as she puts it, a party house. On a recent showing in Longboat Key on Florida's Gulf Coast, her realtor knows location will close the deal.
Need I say more? Oh, what a great view.
100 feet on the beach.
Siegel is 49. She owns a title company in Bethesda, Maryland. Her husband is a builder. They're about to become empty nesters and want to spend more time at a fancier vacation home. Siegel is moving quickly because she senses competition for these luxury homes. She's lured by low interest rates and what she thinks is the tail end of bargain deals post-housing crisis.
I think the corner is going to turn very quickly. You know, usually by the time you look back and say, where was the bottom, it's already way beyond you.
Agent Barbara Ackerman found them their first vacation home in Sarasota 6 years ago. Ackerman sees a new type of luxury buyer. Instead of retirees, they're like the Siegels, professionals in the thick of their careers who don't want the fuss of a fixer-upper.
In a lot of cases, the buyers don't have the time or the vision. They want it now.
And they have the money. Unlike many Americans, these buyers have healthier stock portfolios now, leading to more demand. The chief economist at Florida Realtors, John Tuchillo, says this wealth is one reason why the luxury market is heating up around the Sunshine State.
Buyers now are essentially coming around sniffing at these houses. When you see the sales go up, this is going to embolden sellers to put the houses on the market.
Joy Siegel is ready to jump on any home she falls in love with, almost. She says her family will take a vote before making any offer, and she'll give up square footage for the Gulf of Mexico lapping at her backyard. I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
So, Jeff, you know they say money can't buy you love.
I've heard that.
Well, apparently it's very hard on friendships. There's a new study from Harris Interactive that found 1 in 5 Americans has lost a friend over a money dispute. Have you ever lost any friends over money disputes?
I'm thinking, have I ever lost friends over money disputes? Well you know, I was gambling on whether the London mayor's hair would catch on fire.
And, that can be rough.
There's another guy bet against
who
me.
Hasn't been there, though?
Right.
Well, apparently a lot of it is stress caused by things like going out for drinks or dinner that one friend can afford and the other one can't.
Mm,
but there are
yeah.
also some bigger ticket items. In fact, more than a third of 18 to 34-year-olds have said no to being in a wedding party because of the price tag.
Yeah, I can see that. I've been in that situation, too. I think I've said yes, but with a great deal of pain in my heart.
Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, they say it's the price tag, but maybe it could just be like a really horrible bridesmaid dress or something like that.
And now a little update on the goat man. Yesterday we told you about this fella who hikers have spotted in northern Utah running with the goats, the herds of mountain goats, a man on all fours galloping around in a goat suit. People were a little worried about him, not knowing what his deal was. Well, one day later, all it takes is a little news about the goat man, and people get busy. We have found out he is a hunter from Southern California, a goat hunter, presumably, and he's doing research on the goats. I guess that's as much as we that's as much as we know.
So but like he trying is, to be the goat or something.
Exactly, like... it's a very method method acting way of going hunting. Be the goat, feel the herd, and then you can back up and shoot them a couple weeks later. So no news whether he is done being the goat man, but at least his goat running past has been exposed now. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Horwich.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.